me, Marguerite, who are you doing today?
So we're going to talk a little bit first about the next little like part of the Harlem Renaissance.
Oh, right. You're doing your Harlem Renaissance.
Yes. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Anne Spencer.
Ooh, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. Good.
Good.
Great.
Fine.
We're talking about the Harlem Renaissance. We're going to be looking at some work from the years between 1920 to 1924. And that's sort of the next chapter or the next section of how the Poetry Foundation put together their collection. Again, this is based on the Poetry Foundation's Harlem Renaissance, Intro to the Harlem Renaissance collection.
Very nice.
And all of my information is exclusively from them this week, so.
Thank you, Poetry Foundation.
Shout out to them.
You should donate.
Yeah.
Everyone listening.
So the time frame we're talking about is going to be the 1920 to 1924, like I said.
Yes.
And so the birth of the literary movement within the Harlem Renaissance, because it encompassed like music and fine art in terms of like painting and like that sort of thing.
Right.
So the literary movement within that is said to said to have begun with a dinner at the Civic Club celebrating African American writers like County Cullen and W.E.B. Du Bois. They mingled with members of the white literary establishment and doors began opening. Mm. Alan Locke was given the chance to write an issue of the magazine Survey Graphic, which is the name of the magazine, on quote unquote Harlem, Mecca of the New Negro, which later became a book length study, which would be really interesting to look at.
Yeah.
But even before the Civic Club dinner, writers associated with the Harlem Renaissance were publishing important early works, such as Claude McKay's Harlem Shadows.
We know about Claude McKay.
We know about Claude McKay. Go back and listen to him. Episode, I think it was 10.
10 or something like
that. I think it was 10, yeah. Listen to last week's episode when I say what one it was. just listen to all of them.
You should just listen to our podcast.
What are you doing here? Just listen to it. James Weldon Johnson's anthology, The Book of American Negro Poetry, and John Toomer's Cain, all of which were published during these years. So, Anne Spencer was born on a Virginia farm in 1882. And she actually didn't live in Harlem either. My poet last week did not.
Interesting.
But yeah, these are the ones that, like, I mean, so there's ones like Claude McKay and that sort of thing that that they have in their collection. But there's several people, like, I feel like the majority of them are ones that I have been finding at least. They're considered Harlem Renaissance writers, even though they didn't live in Harlem. They just contributed to sort of the literature of the time and helping promote it, and they were big names at the time and everything. So, so she didn't ever live, she lived in Virginia her whole life.
Crazy.
But she was the daughter of former slaves, and she enrolled in school for the first time at 11 years old at the Virginia Theological Seminary.
I was like, oh my God. No.
Sleep. Virginia Theological Seminary and College, which is now Virginia University of Lynchburg. Which is interesting because, like, she was 11. So I don't. Schools were different back then, I guess.
Schools must have been different back then.
And then she graduated as valedictorian 6 years later.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So enrolled in school for the first time at the age of 11, graduated 6 years later as valedictorian.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. She lived in Virginia her whole life, like I said, but maintained friendships with fellow Harlem Renaissance writers, such as James Weldon Johnson, Langston Hughes, and W.E.B. Du Bois. Yes, all names we know. She worked with Johnson and others to establish the Lynchburg chapter of the NAACP and served 20 years as the librarian for the Dunbar High School. Which is funny. There's someone else. There was another poet that I came across during this time period, or like that they featured during this time period, who had a poem. It was called, like, Dunbar, had something to do with Dunbar. So I don't know if that was, like, a major school in Virginia at the time or what. But she was a librarian there for quite some time. Her poetry addresses themes including religion, race, and the natural world. 30 of her poems were published during her lifetime in anthologies. And her work was gathered posthumously in Time's Unfading Garden, Anne Spencer's Life and Poetry. And there were a few different, like, books or, like, different things that sort of referenced her that had to do with, like, garden and that whatnot. So, I don't know if that's, like, a particular... Well, it says she talked about the, like, natural world, so I think that's probably part of it, is she had lots of themes of, of like, gardens and everything. She's also the subject of, like I'm about to say, she's also the subject of Half My World, The Garden of Anne Spencer, A History and Guide in 2003 by Rebecca T. Frischkorn and Reuben M. Rainey. And she's also the subject of Lessons Learned from a Poet's Garden in 2011 by Jane Barber White. So, garden is a theme.
Yeah, I guess so.
I've got two poems I want to read for you today, and neither of them really have to do with gardens, though. So,
super.
That's interesting.
Love it.
So, this first one is called Translation. We can sort of discuss, I guess, what it might be about or what it's referencing, because honestly, I... don't know entirely. I just think it's a cool poem. And
great.
Yeah.
Let's break this puppy up.
Yeah. So it's called Translation. We trekked into a far country, my friend and I. Our deeper content was never spoken, but each knew all the other said. He told me how calm his soul was laid by the back of an anvil in strife. The wooing kestrel, I said, mutes his mating note to please the harmony of this sweet silence. And when, at the day's end, we laid tired bodies against the loose, warm sands, and the air fleeced its particles for a coverlet, when star after star came out to guard their lovers in oblivion, my soul leapt that my evening prayer stole my morning song.
Wow.
So,
what does that mean?
I don't know. I like that last line. My soul leapt that my evening prayer stole my morning song. Like, I feel like in that I can kind of see what she's saying. I don't know really how to describe it, I guess. But just that, like, her, this evening that she's having or something is so, so, like, great or so moving or something that, like, it, like, her morning song, her, like, joyful morning, whatever is, like, this night is sort of, I don't know, carrying that already. Like, it's, I don't know how to explain what I'm trying to say.
No, I think I know what you mean. Like, the evening is so good. It's my soul so leapt that my evening prayer stole my morning song.
Like,
so
to me, that's
like, the night was so good, I couldn't have dreamt it better if I tried, you know, like,
sure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it just sounds like, wow, what a great, like, night.
See, what I think, or at least what I get from that is that, like, so you wake up in the morning and you're like, your morning song, like, you're joyful to be alive and you're happy and, like, loving life and everything. And so she's, her evening, normally your evening prayer, you're like, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord myself to keep, like, blah, blah, blah. It's like she is so joyful and loving life and all that stuff, like, in her evening prayer. It's not as, like, sort of somber of a thing or whatever, or, like, I don't know. But it's this joyful thing that normally she would, like, wake up with. She's...
My evening prayer... Basically, she's like, the thing I prayed for was better than what I could have expected or something.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know, guys. What do you think?
I don't know.
This was a hard one, but it's, you can find it, right? On poetryfoundation.com.
Yeah, it's called Translation. Translation by Anne Spencer.
It's a beautiful collection of words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
but
it flows very well, but it is really kind of difficult to, and maybe it's because we're so tired, but, like, it is,
I mean, even yes, well, I was tired yesterday too.
It's just a little hard to translate itself.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. And what's interesting is that it's not published in a collection of hers. It's in an anthology.
Mm-hmm.
So, or at least when it was originally published. So it's not, you can't even sort of be like, well, this collection was about this or whatever.
Yeah.
It yeah, it's just sort of her standalone thing. So
I would love to hear what our listeners think of that and what your thoughts are. So if you have any thoughts, you can DM us on Instagram or send your thoughts to millennialpoetsociety @gmail.com.
Send us a voice memo.
Yes. Send us a voice message on Anchor.
Yeah.
We want to hear it.
So the next one is just a short one, but I liked it. It's called Dunbar. So it's named after the school that she was a librarian at.
Yeah.
It's published in the same anthology that the one that I just read translation was in. So the Book of American Negro Poetry, published in 1922.
This is 1922.
Yep. Okay. This is Dunbar. Ah, how poets sing and die. Make one song and heaven takes it. Have one heart and beauty breaks it. Chatterton, Shelley, Keats, and I. Ah, how poets sing and die.
Aw, that's kind of sad, but lovely.
Yeah.
Where it's like, but like, I don't know, it's kind of an interesting thought because a lot of times, and in the poet that I used, they wanted to become a poet because of the immortality of it, because you sort of live forever. And so for her to notice that, like, for poets to sing and die. So like, you have these great words that you write, and you have these beautiful soaring ideas, and then they go away.
Yeah.
And like, and then the muse stops for a moment and you die a little bit, you know, but like, it's almost celebrating that up and down of the writing, you know, the journey of writing poetry, or what is the word I'm thinking of? The like
undulation?
No, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
The like ups and downs of it.
The give and take, the turbulence of being a poet, I guess. So yeah, that is Anne Spencer. Just a short little one this week, but seemed like a pretty cool lady, and really cool that she brought the NAACP to Virginia as well, or to Lynchburg specifically.
Thank you, Anne.
That's the thing about this time is that the Harlem Renaissance, I mean, it was a time of like sort of growth and rebirth in the African American community in terms of all their art and everything, but it's because of sort of what was happening to them at the time and what they were going through and them feeling like empowered to speak out about it and everything.
Right.
So it's a time of this beautiful art in music and poetry and literature in general, and also, like I said, like paintings and like all that stuff.
Right.
But at the same time, like, they're addressing a lot of the times, or in many of their works, like these really hard things to talk about,
right,
and these issues that they're dealing with, and saying like, hey, this isn't like, we aren't going to tolerate this, or this is something that like we need to draw attention to.
But they make them palatable enough so that everybody feels like they can understand it. But I always felt like there was always something deeper to poems of this time period, specifically in the Harlem Renaissance.
Oh,
just like, there's face value and then they're beautiful. And for like somebody like me who has felt a very privileged life, it's just like, what a pretty poem, how nice. And like, I could dig deeper, but like, why bother? Because it's so nice already. And then for people who actually have known heartache or struggle, like, or a life like the writer, there is something just deeper rooted and even more glorious about them. And I just think that that's such a, must have been such a cool time to be alive in that sense. I mean, obviously there was a lot of awful stuff going on,
but
the art
during the time of, when just, all of this change was happening and people speaking out.
I feel like we're not there in the same sense, but our world is cyclical, and I feel like
there's a lot of shit,
a lot of similarities.
A lot of stuff that there's a long way for us to go.
Yeah.
Long way for us to go still. So
yeah,
it's good. And I mean, I feel like it's good to look back at these times and see and read these works like this and observe and take a hard look at what was happening during these times.
Oh, definitely.
And that's a great way to sort of learn from it and be able to move forward and sort of say like, hey, how did we try to progress forward from this?
Right.
Or, like you said, it's cyclical. So it's like, how can we take what we learned from the past and from this experience or what things worked then that we can try to apply now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Thanks for listening.
Anytime.